All right. I'm Allie Wigglesworth from the Center of Excellence in Elder Abuse and Neglect, and I forgot to put the website up. Do you have it on yours, Solomon? Just search on Center of Excellence on Elder Abuse and Neglect, and you can find it. And I'm here to talk about people with dementia as witnesses. So the problem is that people with dementia are vulnerable to crimes, very vulnerable. Maybe there's five times the rates of elder abuse and people with dementia that there is in the normal population. That's what our research shows. And they're often the only witnesses, which we heard in the last session if you were there, which is the case in elder abuse regardless. But people don't believe them. Their family often don't believe them, but certainly police and prosecutors have problems thinking about them being involved in the criminal justice system. So there's evidence that people with dementia may remember significant emotional experiences. This comes both from the neuroscience literature and just from anecdotal evidence if you talk to practitioners. Even people in nursing homes will say, you know, they react when the perp enters the room. We're looking, at people that are still able to actually talk about these things. But emotional memory is mediated differently than some of the other things about memory that happen with dementia. So we wanted research specific to this criminal justice issue. So I'm going to talk, about human subjects research the way people do. And talk about our research questions and hypotheses, our design and methods. We have a novel outcome measure, so I want to try to convince you that it's valid. And then we also had a comparison or a control group, so I wanted to show you how these people look in respect as opposed to, people that do not have cognitive impairment. And then finally, the results in terms of the hypotheses, and the usual conclusions, limitations, recommendations. And I'll try not to go too fast, but I know I've got more than 25 minutes worth here. So the research question is there a subset of people with dementia who have reliable memory for emotional life events? So that was our first question, are they out there? And secondly, if they are, how do they differ? How do you tell within the population of people with dementia that this is someone that you can rely on their memory for emotional events? And emotional memory, as defined in the literature, and is emotionally influenced memory, is also called emotionally influenced memory. It's conscious memory of emotionally arousing events. So here are our hypotheses about how we will characterize these people, who will be the people that have good memory for life events. Well, first of all, they should be able to provide more details than people who have poor memory. They should be able to recount the memory again after a delay. If you think about people who forget everything, so if they tell a story about something you remember, can they repeat that story? I don't know if you know what confabulation is. Confabulation is a phenomenon in the elderly population and even especially in the people with dementia where it's not exactly lying, it's telling stories, or it's saying it's because you don't have the answer, you come up with a different answer. But it's not necessarily the truth. We don't call it lying because there doesn't seem to be an awareness that that's what they're doing. I know my father is a fabulous confabulator. He's a 96-year-old with dementia, and he tells great stories. So we had to look for confabulation. And we thought that these people would be at an earlier stage of dementia, so we measured that. Psychotic systems often go along with dementia, things like hallucinations, delusions, illusions, disinhibition. So we looked for those things to see if they would be related to who has better emotional memory. And then there's something called awareness. People with dementia may or may not be aware that they have dementia. So we attempted to measure that and see that if people were more aware of what's going on with them cognitively, does that also make them more reliable? So all of those are compared to people who don't have good emotional memory. So our research design is, first of all, part of our study design was to start out by talking to experts. I mean, we're just researchers. I'm a gerontologist. So, I mean, we do have an elder abuse forensic center. I've seen the criminal justice side of things, but I thought I better talk to people first to get something useful. It's kind of the way we like to do research. And so I talked to experts in child abuse, domestic violence, et cetera. And the key seemed to be what was our interviewing technique. And so they said, you know, first you look, you know, you try to get them to talk just about it without cueing them at all. So this is called recall in the memory literature. An example of a question that elicits recall is what happened. You know, it's an open-ended question. Then recognition is the next level down, and this is easier, we already know, for older adults. You know, it's the yes-no a question as opposed to tell me about it. So an example of a recognition by a category would be, did someone hurt you? And then there's another level of recognition where you talk about the specific event. Did your grandson knock you down? That would be recognition by event. Now, even when we ask questions like that, we ask them to give more details so that we could verify that they really were remembering it. So it's a cross-sectional case comparison group design, convenient samples. We use dyads, which we often do in our dementia research. So there's a pair. There's an older adult with or without dementia, depending on whether they're a case or comparison, and an informant, usually a caregiver or close family member. We did this mainly in private residences. A few were in senior centers. So we did structured interviews. We also had a number of questionnaires to evaluate some of the other variables, and we recorded everything because we needed to do actual rating of some of our variables. Inclusion criteria for the older adult members, well, cases, had a dementia diagnosis. We screened for early to moderate dementia. We did pretty well. We ended up with a couple of people with severe dementia, and we took them out of the analysis. And, of course, they must have someone, an informant, willing to participate. The comparison group, no cognitive impairment. We attempted to do age and gender comparison, and they also must have an informant. The informants could have no cognitive impairment, and they needed to know the older adult participant well. So in the study procedures, first thing is separate the two. We had two research assistants, you know, went in separate rooms, one with the older adult, one with the informant. With the older adult, we elicited emotional life event memories. And with the informant, we took those memories across to the informant and said, can you verify these, and ask them to talk about it in some length, the same memories. We also asked the informant to give us some life events, and, you know, took those over into the other room where the person, the older adult, was. And if they hadn't already mentioned that event, we got some verification from the older adult that event had occurred. So, and then we collected the other data, the characteristics of the participants and of the life events. And then we had the recordings to actually assess whether the memories did match. And we had a rating scale for that, and the characteristics of memories, like the number of details. We also looked at things like valence of memory, positive or negative. So in the structured interview, just a little more detail on that, we started with four open-ended questions. So they were, can you think of anything that happened in the last month that made you happy or that you especially enjoyed? And that elicited a memory, fine. Then we went on, what about in the last 6 months? Then in the last month, can you think of anything that made you sad or angry or that was particularly unpleasant? Also in the last 6 months. So those were our open-ended questions. Cued recognition for types of events, we used a geriatric adverse life events list. This is a standard instrument for looking for stress. You know, maybe you've seen a stress list, the kinds of things that happen to older adults that are, you know, adverse events. Deaths, financial difficulties, movements to nursing homes, you know, or other kinds of moves. There were 26 of them on this list. It's in the literature. We added some positive events like birth of a grandchild, family gatherings, and we used these to cue, you know, if something like this happened. So we use this both with the informant to say, if something like this happened to the older adult, we used it with the older adult to try to get them to remember things that have happened. And then finally, as I said, if we got a memory from the informant that the older adult had already mentioned, we would check and see if that happened, or if they could verify it. So we had to develop a whole rating scale, and it's really quite detailed. But on a high level, a one is a good corroboration for the event. So we listened to what the informant said, we listened to the older adult said, and said, yep, you know, they're talking about the same thing. The next rating would be there would be some corroboration for event. Often these were things that happened multiple times. Visits from grandchildren were big. And maybe, you know, they were remembering different visits, or, you know, they were remembering a longer ago visit, but they remembered the visit from the grandchildren. So there was some corroboration. They did remember visits from grandchildren, whether they were remembering the same specific event. Interestingly, this is very similar to other literature, even child witness literature, that if there's multiple events, you have worse memory for it. If they couldn't corroborate it, you know, we weren't willing to say it didn't happen. Maybe they just didn't know about it. Maybe, you know, we would decide. Or if they appeared to be confabulating, they'd say, oh, yeah, it happened, but they couldn't tell you any more about it. And then finally, if they said, no, you know, I don't remember that. So this goes from, you know, better memories this way. So it goes from 4 down to 1 if you remember the scale. So it's opposite direction. So you see we got a lot of variability in the memory. So this was good. You know, it's good for doing statistics. And the comparison group's way over here, very close to 1. And you can see that the average memory reliability. What we did was rate each memory that they talked about and then took the average across the memories. So these are averages of all memories of each individual, and we had 93 people. So that's our outcome measure, and now I'm going to talk some more about that because we had to validate it. So remember, we've got this, and this is looking at it a little different way. You know, obviously significantly different between the comparison group and the people with dementia. The way we validated it is we looked at it two ways. There are measures of episodic memory, and what they do is you tell a story and show pictures, and then later, with a delay or not, you ask about the story and the pictures. And so that's sort of simulating a life event or episodic memory. That's what the laboratory instruments do. The other thing is we knew of a test emotional memory specifically, and I'll tell you more about this. But this is the data on episodic memory. We had two because both to test confabulation and to test emotional memory in the three-phase test, they were both episodic memory tests. They're both highly correlated with, you know, our novel measure of emotional memory, so that made us think we were actually doing something real. And just to look at emotional memory, Larry Cahill is also at UCI. He's an eminent neuroscientist, and he developed this three-phase story to test emotional memory. So the way this works is there's phase one of the story that has 4 pictures. I'll tell you the story, you know, briefly. A little boy and his mother are going to see his father at work. You know, they're about to cross the street. I forget what else, you know, pictures of that happening. Phase two, the story takes a dramatic turn, and one picture is very emotional. Little boy gets hit by a car, gets rushed to the hospital, and they show this grisly picture of his legs were severed and sewed back on, you know, so very memorable. And then phase three is sort of wind down, you know, the little boy's okay, his mother calls work and says she'll be late. So so anyway, the way you measure emotional memory with this is in phase one, you have a kind of baseline of how good their recall and their recognition, if you remember, you know, me talking about those are, you measure both. And then in phase two, you think those might improve because that's more salient information. And in phase three, it comes down. And the measure is this delta. So if you've got a significant difference within group, you know, within person, their memory improves in recognition or recall, then emotional memory is present. And in fact, usually, when Cahill does this, he waits a week, right? Because he's got, you know, college students doing it, right? We've got elders. We waited 5 minutes. Neither group performed better on recognition memory, and that's probably, if we'd waited longer, we would have had something there. But both groups performed better on recall. So, in fact, they were quite comparable. So both groups appear to have emotional memory. And these are all within subjects. So these are four different tests to see if there was a significant change. And you can see that they're getting toward a significant change with the comparison group, so maybe their emotional memory is a little better. Nothing at all in terms of the people with dementia and recognition, but they're quite similar on recall. Now, the baseline is, you know, that the people in the comparison group remembered a lot more, but the change is similar. So we felt pretty good about our measure. We went on, and next on our agenda, we looked at the changes between the comparison, we compared with the comparison group. So first, just you know, statistically controlled variables, they were very similar, you know, in all the things we felt we had to control, but we did not manage to get them controlled on age. It's really tough when you're looking for 100 people with dementia whose caregivers are not. I found it defensive, but are not too overwhelmed to participate in your study. You know, if you're looking at people in their 90s, chances are they're going to be demented. If you're looking at people in their 60s, chances are they're not going to be demented. So it's almost artificial to try to match this. And, you know, and then, you know, to do it, you end up turning down people in their 90s, which somehow doesn't seem right, but we got pretty close, and so what we decided to do was adjust for these variables, which we will do. So they matched on things we wanted them to match, and they didn't match on things we didn't expect them to match, which are like a mental status exam. We use the Montreal Cognitive Assessment because it has a language scale and attention scale. These are both things that are very important to memory, so we thought we should keep tabs on those. And then functional abilities is activities of daily living or instrumental activities of daily living. You know, can they toilet themselves? Can they feed themselves? You know, but mostly it was instrumental, but at this level, you know, can they manage their financial affairs? Obviously, these people were more impaired. We expected them to be. So a comparison of the dyadic relationships, we thought it was really important to see that, you know, we had the same kind of relationships. And in terms of most were spouses, the groups were very comparable. Most were co-resident and absolutely comparable. Length of time, no, mostly over 10 years, comparable. And frequency seen daily. So we felt like, you know, we matched the dyadic groups. So now matching on some of those variables we're interested in for our hypotheses or comparing, and they were different. So people in the comparison group remembered more details, but people with dementia remembered a lot of details too. People in the comparison group, you know, without a flaw, were able to remember after delay, all of them. People with dementia, a lot of them did, but it was significantly different. Then we looked at some other interview variables that we hadn't even hypothesized because we realized we had them. So like the ability to recall or the proportion of memories, all of their memories from recall. Kind of interesting. The comparison group, 50% of their memories came from just asking those open-ended questions, whereas in the people with dementia, over 50% came from, you know, the other room, the informant telling them, you know, this happened, and they're going, oh, yeah, that happened, you know, and then talking about it. But they didn't differ at all on memories cued by topic, just on recall. And this one I really like, which is no difference in the proportion of positive memories. Now, elders remember positive things more than younger people, which is nicely adaptive. And people with dementia remember even fewer negative things, which is there is a difference between the groups in that the comparison group remembers a higher proportion of negative events. But I have an interesting variable, as you'll see. Confabulation. Now, how you look at confabulation is a couple of ways. So this is this episodic memory test. You tell a story, and then you ask questions. If you don't know the answers and you're confabulating, you're more likely to say yes, right? These are yes-no questions. Well, yeah, they were more likely to say yes. IDK is I don't know, when the answer should have been no or yes. But look at the comparison group. I think they're doing a little confabulating too. But significantly more, as we expected. And then the other way you do it is you have questions to which you don't know the answer. Was the teacher's name Ann? Nobody told you the teacher's name. If you said yes, you know, you were confabulating. And they were significantly different at the 0.05 level, which is still quite significant because this is based on four questions. So we felt like we did find a difference in confabulation. Now let me go on to just looking at the people with dementia. So the rest of this, forget the comparison group. We're just looking at all these people with dementia. We've got our outcome variable, and we're looking for what's associated with it. Well, age is significantly associated with it, so we'll still control for that. We still control for education, even though it isn't. And then the interview variables, most of them are, all except for positive memory, the ones we looked at. So number of details, memories repeated after delay, proportion of negative memories, those with better memory were more likely to report negative memories, and proportion of memories from recall, and even proportion of memories from cued recognition from those that long list, though that's not as significant. Now, there's a lot of collinearity between these, if you know your statistical language. Then looking at the non-interview variables, the other variables, yeah, dementia severity is certainly associated with it. Not confabulation, not either the confabulation. Awareness was associated, but sorry, our measure didn't work very well. We had some inter-rater effects, so I'm not going to put that in my final model because of that. No association of the neuropsychiatric behaviors. We found neuropsychiatric behaviors, but you could be, you know, hallucinating and still have valid memory or not. So that didn't predict. So we decided also to look at this episodic memory because that associated so strongly. We had not put that in our hypotheses, but we thought we might want to put it in our model. And we had really three measures. We had a measure that was just recognition responses that had a little more variability. So we used that and some of our other measures, you know, looked at collinearity. And we came up with four models that we thought were pretty good. I like the two on the left because you can figure them out just by talking to people. So recall and percent of negative kind of cancel each other out, so I put them, you could use either one. Both negative memories and recall are good predictors, but you wouldn't put them both in the same model because they are collinear. Number of details and delay are also very collinear, so I use mean number of details in the model, and it's a very strong predictor. And then if you put in episodic memory tests, they are also strong predictors. So you come up with four different ways to say, you know, I've got a pretty good idea who's got good emotional memory or not. You know, this is explaining 73 to 77% of the variability. Okay. So conclusions: a significant subset of people with dementia were able to report on emotionally influenced life event memories. Confabulation and neuropsychiatric behaviors did not indicate whether or not a person with dementia could reliably report on emotional memories. And the findings, to me anyway, indicate that maybe investigators, APS, law enforcement, should consider this kind of structured interviewing of people with dementia who are witnesses to crimes. Limitations of the study. This is a study of kind of benign events. There were some traumatic events. Elder abuse is traumatic, and the neuroscience literature says that may be different, if anything more salient, but other things can happen. So that study probably should be done, really hard to do. We rated from just listening to the tapes. We haven't transcribed these. I'm going to try to get them transcribed when I get some students working for me. The number of details are, you know, it's just we did 0, 1 to 2 or 3 or more. We don't have fine detail there. And also, our raters were aware that the participants were people with dementia or comparison group. So those are limitations. Future directions. I'm wondering what even these people with poor memory are remembering, and I can look at my data maybe to look at that a little more. This is just the beginning. There's lots of literature on child witnesses, even some on older adult witnesses, and this is the first we know of just on people with dementia. So there's a lot more that we could look at, and like I said, we need research on people with dementia and abuse or trauma. We did a study that I presented last year on bruising. We approached 400 APS physical abuse victims, and 80 of them participated. 5 of those were demented, and by the way, they all remembered how they got their bruises. But that's 400 people to get 5. I think it's going to be hard to do that research. I'd like some creative ideas of how to do it, because I'd love to do it. This is our team. I work with Laura Mosqueda and some other folks, and we did have some very good consulting people. Elizabeth Loftus does all the work with Eyewitness, Larry Cahill, and Dara Sorkin helped us with the methodology. Thanks.